So here's the contrast. Here on the left side is a cold sore, recurrent herpes simplex, a very small part of the second division of the trigeminal is involved. Whereas on the right, we have zoster, which involves almost the entire dermatome. And if you look at the issue of who gets persisting pain and postherpetic neuralgia and what causes it, this is a slide that comes from Peter Watson, and what's clearly the case is that the setting in which you get postherpetic neuralgia and prolonged pain is the destruction of nerve cells in the ganglion, shown here, replaced by fibroblasts. This is fibrosis. These are the nerve cells in the uninvolved portion of the trigeminal, and the destruction of relay neurons in the dorsal horn. So this is the setting in which one gets postherpetic neuralgia. And remember, in zoster, one has prodromal pain, which can last for several days and sometimes more than a week. And that prodromal pain is caused by all of the multiplication and damage that the virus is doing at the level of the ganglion and progressing into the cord before it comes down to the skin. Now, the script for the shingles prevention study was actually written by Edgar Hope Simpson, a fantastic British physician interested in epidemiology who died at age 93 about 3 years ago. And he wrote what I think is the best paper in the clinical virology literature. He published it in, this isn't a typo, he published it in 1965. It's the results of 16 years of careful observation of his patient practice in Cirencester in the UK. He drank at the local pub, so he didn't miss a case of mild zoster, and he didn't miss a case of chickenpox. And he made a number of observations, but from the point of view of shingles, the two most important ones were the fact that over age, as you get older, the red line, the incidence and severity of shingles increases. And in addition, in contrast to herpes simplex, which recurs over and over again in healthy people, most people only got shingles once. So that Hope Simpson hypothesized that the reason for the increase in shingles with age was a decline in immunity to the virus, immunity which we were endowed with when we have chickenpox. And the reason for the scarcity of second episodes was all that virus in the skin, all that virus in the skin, the vertical column with the arrow under it, essentially boosts immunity and immunizes you against the second episode. Now, recognizing, however, that in 1965, the life expectancy in the UK was under 65, and the best way not to have a second case of shingles is to die shortly after your first case. So the jury, and nobody's done a Hope Simpson equivalent study now when the life expectancy is 85 or 90. And so that's an important thing to keep in mind, that unknown. Now, in contrast to what's happening in herpes simplex, during latency in herpes simplex, there are no viral proteins expressed. There's only a transcript of which there are many copies, but it doesn't function as messenger RNA. In contrast, during herpes zoster latency in the lately infected neuron, there are half a dozen immediate early and early genes expressed. There's no virus, but there's gene expression, which gives you the theoretical possibility of having recognition and modulation of immunity and reactivation by the immune system. Now, Hope Simpson, and this is just a slightly fancied up version of what Hope Simpson had in that paper, Hope Simpson in 1965 hypothesized the natural history of herpes zoster. Hypothesized that chickenpox, the left-hand vertical bar of orange, that chickenpox did two things. It induced latency in neurons, and it endowed people with a level of immunity. I changed only one thing to bring this up to date, and that is changed antibody, which he had as a critical level, to a critical level of host resistance. And now we could actually say a critical level of cell-mediated immunity to varicella zoster virus. And then Hope Simpson said that the virus must reactivate but quickly get snuffed out by the immune system, and these were his contained reversions. And when that happened, there was a little boost in immunity, slowing down the decline that occurs with age. And then eventually, the level of immunity fell below that critical dotted line level, which we don't know what that is. And then one got shingles. And with that, one got a tremendous amount of antigenic stimulus, and a boost, and essentially immunized against another episode. So the shingles prevention study essentially was a very large study in which we attempted to imitate Mother Nature, but without paying the price of shingles. And that is substituting a large amount of live attenuated varicella zoster virus for shingles. And it's Takahashi, Michiaki Takahashi, sitting here on the Shinkansen with his wife Hiroko, who is responsible for the vaccine. And because all of us adults who are at risk of shingles are immune to chickenpox, it takes a lot more virus to boost our immunity than it takes to immunize a child, or an adult for that matter, who has never seen the virus. So there's about 14 or 15 times more virus in the zoster vaccine than there is in varicella vaccine. Now, a couple of things about study design and endpoints. The shingles prevention study was a very large randomized study in which we vaccinated 38,546 people 60 and over at 22 study sites across the United States, at each site randomizing in two age strata, 60 to 69 and 70 and over. And then they were actively followed for herpes zoster and postherpetic neuralgia to the end of the study, which was an average of a little more than 3 years. Now, there are a number of challenges, and I'm not going to go into these, but I just want to mention them to you because this is what you face with any large prospective study. Enrolling people, we thought it would be easy, but it turned out that it was challenging. Active follow-up of 38,000 people is a real challenge. When we first met to talk about planning this, we thought we'd have clerks who we would hire to make the phone calls. And then we realized that the number of clerks and then the number of psychiatrists they would need to keep them sane, spending the whole day calling people, was just too much. And fortunately, we were able to adopt an automated telephone response system, so the subjects on a monthly basis called and interacted with a computer, answered some questions, and only if it looked as if they might have had shingles were they told to call their study site. And that did most of the work. 86% of the work of follow-up. The 14% was done by the study coordinators. It was still a big job. They hated it, but they did it. Then the other thing is, how do you measure the impact of shingles and then prevention of that impact? And the problem is that the main problem induced by shingles is pain, and pain is subjective. You can't put a pain meter on me and measure it. So we had to develop that. And then the next question was a primary endpoint, because with an endogenous virus, we really didn't think it was very likely that we would prevent infection. We thought we might modify it. So we needed to find an endpoint that would be sensitive to prevention or modification or both. And finally, very important issue that you've dealt with both influenza and pneumonia, pneumococcal pneumonia, and that is you want to be judging the efficacy of an intervention in proven cases of the disease.